manager at AMVAC. To learn more, head to www.amvac.com.
We all know what the 4-H pledge is. I pledge my head to clearer thinking, my heart to greater loyalty, my hands to larger service, and my health to better living. For my club, my community, my country, and my world. Big city folks might not get it, but Western Wisconsin does. I'm Rebecca Cook, and I grew up on a dairy farm that's been here for generations. I'm a proud 4-H alumni, and I'm running for Congress. Farms like my family's have been under siege for decades. Big Ag has driven so many of us out of business. And what's Congress done? Nothing. Derek Van Orden has gone Washington. He yells at workers, talks down to people, and acts like he's better than us. He's in Congress to serve himself, not Wisconsin. I'm running for Congress to serve you. I'll stand up to Democrats to fight for a secure border, support police, and stop the wasteful spending. I'm Rebecca Cook, candidate for Congress, and I approve this message because values of 4-H beat the values of Washington any day of the week. Paid for by Cook for Congress.
You're listening to WRDN, 1430 AM, Durand, Mondovi, Wabasha, and 107.3 FM at Translator W297CH, Durand.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. U.S. Intel says the origins of a video falsely showing individuals in Haiti voting in Georgia was the work of Russian influence actors. Georgia Republican Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger earlier deemed the video fake. ABC's Pierre Thomas has more.
The bogus Georgia video follows another in battleground Pennsylvania, showing someone destroying Trump ballots. The feds say it's a Russian fake, too. But the good news, according to Homeland Security's top election protection official, despite those efforts, America's voting system is completely secure.
Presidential candidates today campaigning in Midwest swing states. In Orlando, a 17-year-old in custody for last night's downtown shooting that killed two and injured six others. Police say they still don't have a motive, but authorities have issued an overnight curfew. Cheers along the parade route in Los Angeles, celebrating the Dodgers World Series title. The team also won the World Series in 2020, but due to COVID, did not hold a victory parade. This is ABC News. A decades-old study in the UK shows that women who control their sugar intake during pregnancy and nursing can have positive effects for their children.
With data from the UK Biobank, over 60,000 people were studied following the end of sugar rationing in 1953. Early life sugar rationing reduced type 2 diabetes risk by 35% and high blood pressure risk by 20%, while delaying the onset of these diseases a few years. The protective effects were strongest for those limiting sugar during pregnancy and postnatally. Science magazine says more studies needed as only people from wealthier and healthier backgrounds were studied.
ABC's Chuck Sievertson. It was the word that you may not have been able to escape this summer. The Collins Dictionary has named brat its 2024 Word of the Year. Brat was made famous by singer Charlie XCX and is defined as having a confident and independent attitude. Collins says that term brat summer was one of the most talked about phrases. Michelle Franz and ABC.
Imagine your team always looking and feeling their best in high-performance technical workwear. Cintas can make it happen. They have garments for almost every job imaginable. And with the Cintas Workwear program, you get freshly laundered garments delivered every week for everyone on your team. Great garments without the bother of laundry. That's a real perk for employees. Find out how Cintas can boost team image and morale. Visit Cintas.com.
Oh, I'm ready!
And get ready for the workday.
Still getting around to that fix on your car? You got this. On eBay, you'll find millions of parts guaranteed to fit. Doesn't matter if it's a major engine repair or your first time swapping your windshield wipers. eBay has that part you need, ready to click perfectly into place. For changes big and small, loud or quiet, find all the parts you need at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit every time. But you already know that. eBay. Things. People. Love. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Wisconsin Radio Network News, filling in for Ted Ehlin. I'm Raymond Neupert. The mother of Elijah Vu pleads not guilty to charges in the three-year-old boy's death. Bob Haig has an update.
31-year-old Katrina Bauer pleaded not guilty this week to felony charges of chronic neglect of a child resulting in death and neglecting a child under age six. Bauer's next court date is December 20th. She's being held at the Manitowoc County Jail on a $400,000 cash bond. Her boyfriend, Jesse Vang, is also charged in Elijah's death. He's being held on a $500,000 bond and has a court date on Monday. Elijah went missing in February in Two Rivers, and his remains were found there September 7th.
The presidential campaigns are making different pitches to women voters at his rally in Ashwaubenon on Wednesday night. Former President Donald Trump said he's going against the advice of his advisors.
And my people told me about 4 weeks ago, I was saying, no, I want to protect the people. I want to protect the women of our country. I want to protect the women. Sir, please don't say that. Why? They said, we think it's very inappropriate for you to say, so why? I'm president. I want to protect the women of our country.
Vice President Kamala Harris responded to Trump's remarks in Madison Thursday morning.
It actually is, I think, very offensive to women in terms of not understanding their agency, their authority, their right, and their ability to make decisions about their own lives, including their own bodies.
Trump and Harris will make what are likely their final appeals to Wisconsin voters today. Trump at Fiserv Forum in Milwaukee, Harris at State Fair Park in West Allis. Speaking of the election, if you have an absentee ballot, now's the time to fill it out and bring it into the clerk's office or drop it in the mail. Early voting in person continues through Sunday. More news is next here on Wisconsin Radio Network.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
Here's your Real Country 1430 forecast.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlau. A high pressure system has settled in, clearing those clouds and calming our winds, but also providing some crisp temperatures. Highs today will only climb to the upper 40s and tonight fall to the mid 30s. But with plenty of sunshine on tap and warming temperatures, Saturday looks splendid. Grandpa's Barbecue Sauce. Get yours now at grandpasbbqshop.com. It's 43 degrees at our studios.
After a strong start to the day on export demand on Friday, corn and soybeans end up highs. Is this election jitters? And what's the grain and livestock market outlook for the rest of this year to 2025? We'll have more as our College Roadshow continues from South Dakota State University in Brookings. Go Jack!
Live from the First of 11 via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll chat with Mike Miner from Professional Ag Marketing. We also rejoin coverage of Farm Journal's College Roadshow at South Dakota State University with Matt Dearson. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now, welcome this afternoon's celebrity guest host from Markets Now. Say hello to Michelle Rook. Good afternoon, hey, Michelle.
Hey, happy Friday. How's it been going?
It is. Really good. Really good. How about with you?
Good. We did do College Roadshow at South Dakota State University this week. That was the last College Roadshow. And our thanks again to Bex Hybrids for sponsoring our series that we've been doing for several weeks, both on U.S. Farm Report and on Ag Day. Clinton and I hosted the show this morning from South Dakota State University. And Mike Miner was with us, and he was on a marketing panel. Matt Dearson's going to be joining us from SDSU. I'm an SDSU alum, so we are going to have SDSU and Go Jacks all the way around.
Wow, big day. Big day. I'm excited.
Yep. No doubt. It is going to be great. And we ended the week as far as the grains with lower weekly closes, even though we had just a little bit higher close today in corn and soybeans. So we're going to talk about that, kind of what's going on in the markets here, including the big election coming up next week here with our market guest today.
That's right around the corner.
Yeah, I'll be actually glad when we get it out of the way here because markets do not like uncertainty. So,
well, they do not. I don't know. I'm hoping that the count is easy. The victor is clear
quickly.
What did Wiesmeyer say this
morning? I don't
want
a November of Rage. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Did Jim think that we would know who the victor was Tuesday night, or will it take a long time?
Jim is not hopeful, nor am I. Yeah. No.
Okay. Well, that is entirely possible, and I don't think that is the best outcome, but...
Well, yeah, part of the reason is because of all the early voting and the mail-in ballots. Some states count them as they get them. Other states wait until Election Day, and then they count them. That's part of the holdup there. But there's going to be a whole lot going on. Stay tuned, everyone.
But the markets have been gearing up for all of this. Obviously, we've seen kind of some wild trade, not only because of the election. It was end of month yesterday, and... So there's a lot of interesting moving parts going on here in the markets, for sure, for sure.
For sure. Yeah. Well, let's talk about some of those moving parts in this afternoon's news.
Yeah,
after trying to work higher early in the session, wheat futures turned back to finish south of even. Ukraine's October grain exports rose 58.6% from last year. In the first 4 months of 24-25, Ukraine shipped 14.4 million metric tons of grain. Significant rain is expected in the first week of the outlook in central Oklahoma and south central Kansas, with World Weather Inc. noting the rain event could be, quote, unprecedented or close to it for the month of November. December HRW wheat futures today were 2.5 cents lower at 566.75. December soft-red wheat slipped 2.5 cents to 568. Oh, it looks like spring wheat has not yet settled. I've got it down, spring wheat, the December contract at 599, down 5.25. Now, Michelle, on the week, it doesn't seem so bad. The December hard red winter wheat contract down 0.25, and a soft red off just a penny on the week. So feels like it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, definitely. I do think that wheat tried to follow corn and soybeans initially this morning, but obviously with this rain forecast, you have some weather premium being taken out of the market. We're going to be watching to see just how good that coverage is, because the drought monitor expanded drought in winter wheat areas to 62% here this last week. So it is still a concern.
Yep. Well, Michelle, strength in crude oil and recent export activity supported a rise in corn futures today. USDA reported daily corn sales of 781,000 metric tons to Mexico. Of that, 715,000 for 24-25 and the remainder for 25-26. December corn has tested several key moving averages, each trading around 414, which are backed by resistance at 416. Initial support lies at 410.75. December corn futures today were 3.75 higher at 414.5. March corn added 3.25 cents to 429.25. July corn futures closed at 442.25. That's up 2.5 cents on the day. And on the week, your December corn contract down just a penny. Now, Michelle, we settled right here at the 414.5 area. Lots of key moving averages, the 10, 20, 40. I think even the 100-day moving average in that area. Yeah, I wonder,
they're all if this means anything. Right up there. Well, Mike's going to talk a little bit, I think, coming up about how we're kind of consolidating in a pretty narrow range here in that corn market. We just can't seem to get above those key moving averages as resistance, even though we've had all this darn export business coming at the market.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, soybeans backed away from early gains to end the day in negative territory. USDA did report daily soybean sales of 132,000 metric tons to China and 198,000 metric tons to unknown destinations, both for the 24-25 marketing year. Daily sales of 30,000 metric tons of soybean oil to India was also reported for 24-25. January soybean futures tested resistance at the 20-day moving average of 10.05.75 for the first time since October 8, before pulling back, falling to settle below the 10-day moving average. Jan beans down 0.75 cents to 9.93.75. March beans fell 1.25 cents to 10.08.25. July beans closed at 10.38. That's down 0.75 cents. And on the week, the January soybean contract down all of 3.75 cents. Michelle?
Yeah, I think soybeans really got caught in between meal making new contract lows today, dipping under, you know, that $300 level, and soybean oil in the big rally that was going on over there today. And so that's why we ended kind of almost flat on the day.
Well, December cotton today was 60 points higher at 70.17. On the week, December cotton down 49 points. On your livestocks, wholesale beef prices dropped $1.84 for choice to $3.1760 and $3.95 for select to $2.8537 yesterday, extending the price pullback from recent highs. The cash cattle market has performed relatively well with generally steady prices in the southern plains and steady to weaker in the northern market. Today, December live cattle softened 37.5 cents to $1.8592. November feeder futures $1.50 higher, $2.4687.5. And on the snout side, December lean hog futures have scored a new contract high for the fifth straight day amid strengthening cash and wholesale fundamentals. These hogs gained 27.5, to 84.07.5 on the week. December fat cattle down 322.5. Novi feeder futures down $1.70, but look out for the hogs stampeded $4.40 higher on the week. That's your December hog contract there, Michelle.
Yeah, that has been an unbelievable counter-seasonal move that we've had in the hogs.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, it was a choppy day in the cattle market. I hope you had your seatbelt on, and there's probably more of that to come. Hey, we are going to talk about all of this coming up here. Like we said, Mike Miner joining us from Professional Ag Marketing, and we are also bringing in Matt Dearson from SDSU to talk markets, coming right up here on Agriday in your College Roadshow at SDSU.
If you're applying a low-rate nitrogen stabilizer, you might be falling for a losing strategy. Low-rate products promise great results, but may lack the potency of higher active ingredient concentrations. So great isn't always what you get. Instead of putting your yield at risk, put your trust in Anvil Nitrogen Stabilizer and Super U Premium Fertilizer from Koch Agronomic Services. Both offer higher active ingredient concentrations imitator brands can't match. See the difference at defendyourn.com.
What's the first thing you do in the morning? For many farmers and ranchers, it's checking weather and market updates. Make AgWeb Daily Newsletter part of your morning routine. Not only bringing you essential news and weather updates, but also covering topics such as smart farming and agriculture's next generation. And each weekday, stay informed and stay ahead with AgWeb Market Weekly. Whether you're at home or in the field, AgWeb Market Weekly keeps you connected and competitive.
Delivered straight to your inbox. Subscribe to both today at agweb.com/newsletters and never miss a beat.
You set high expectations for yourself, and so do we. As America's largest farmer-led, farmer-focused agricultural and educational event, Commodity Classic has held record-breaking shows 2 years in a row, keeping you at the top of your game with a world-class trade show and inspiring education designed by farmers for farmers. Commodity Classic is elevating excellence in agriculture as we visit Denver for the first time in 2025. Join us March 2nd through 4th and discover more at commodityclassic.com.
Mom's early Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard to take.
And when I left the oven on, we decided together that it was time to see a doctor and make a plan.
Early detection gave us more time to seek out information and support as a family.
If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. For more information, visit alz.org/time-to-talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Want to get
building a new home or remodeling and need a new plumber? Call Bauer Plumbing and Septic. Need a perk test or septic system? Call Bauer Plumbing and Septic. Need sewer line cleaning or repair? Call Bauer Plumbing and Septic. Need a new water heater or repair? Call Bauer Plumbing and Septic. From basic plumbing to big projects, call Chris Bauer of Bauer Plumbing and Septic Service at 715-672-8224. That's 715-672-8224.
There are better known tractors in the world than Coyote. Ones with bigger names, longer histories, more popular hats, cute toy lines. But there's not a single tractor ever been built that's better equipped to do the dirty work. So we'll just focus on what really matters. Coyote, we dig dirt.
Dig some dirt with a Coyote tractor, now available at Anabus Silo, Highway 25, Durand.
Do you suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk. All right, Michelle Rook, let's settle this. I'm sorry to jump in on you there. You're the guest host.
That's
here.
Okay.
Welcome to AgriTalk. This is Michelle Rook. She's in for us today. I know hogs don't stampede, but I don't know what they do. Cattle stampede? What do you... What do you call it when a whole herd of pigs knocks down the fence and takes off for the neighbors? What do you call that?
A mess. It's a mess.
Well played. Yes, a mess of pigs.
It's a mess of pigs, yeah. I just laughed when you said stampede because I was thinking cattle stampede, not pigs.
Sure.
So.
Sure. Well, yeah. 440, though, on the weeks feels like a stampede.
Yeah, I gotcha.
For the little hogs. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah, and Mike Miner's going to, he and I are going to talk a little bit about, not only is that a contra-seasonal move for hogs, it is starting to become a very historic move, especially for December hogs. Let's bring in our guest here today. Of course, it is College Roadshow this week at South Dakota State University in Brookings. Ears up, everybody. And as a result, we asked Mike Miner from Professional Ag Marketing in Luverne, Minnesota to join us. And the reason is because Mike is an SDSU graduate. What was your major, Mike?
Ag Econ.
AggieCon. And I always thought you were a Minnesota boy, but you actually grew up almost as close to Brookings, South Dakota on the farm as I did, right?
Yeah, correct. Just the south side of Brookings there. And I guess I quickly moved over to Minnesota, I guess, with my career, but yeah.
And you still have family at home and your brother's farm in there?
Yeah, my brother Clay and my dad Brad.
Your dad.
Both farm. Yep.
Very cool. And we also have Matt Dearson with us, Griffith Endowed Professor and also SDSU Extension Risk and Business Management Specialist. Matt, how many years have you been at SDSU now?
Oh, let's call it 25 years.
25. Okay. Well, yeah. Time goes fast for sure. Well, thanks so much for both of you joining us here. As we said, we've got the rabbits, jackrabbits in the house here, all three of us here today to talk about markets. And Mike, of course, market's been buzzing here today about more flash sales to Mexico this morning, about another 31 million bushels. China and unknown bought almost 12 million bushels, and we had really strong weekly exports. But let's talk about this demand. Do you think that this is routine, or is there more going on?
Yeah, let's start on the corn side. It's a little bit more fun to talk about right now.
Yeah.
You know, Mexico, along with some other countries like Japan, finally getting back in and buying some corn from us. It's pretty exciting. And this isn't really abnormal for them to be making some massive purchases in this time frame, especially Mexico. They're known to front load a little bit on their export activity. So that totally makes sense. When I look at it here, the USDA, they were projecting higher exports going into this marketing year. And that raised a few questions, and it looks like we've really lived up to those expectations. So I'll buy into this, and I'll say that, you know, here in this next report, even coming up next week, are we going to raise exports for the corn side a little bit? I could buy into it, maybe a little bit of a raise. I don't think we'd change anything dramatically in this report for demand, but from what we're seeing, sure, I'll take a little bump on the export side. I think corn sales about the third best that we've had in the last 10 years, and I think one, you know, they're taking advantage of some lower prices than normal,
right.
And two, now, you know, you look at the trade war concerns in 25.
Yeah, and we have had, obviously, some talk about increased tariffs in the Trump campaign. Maybe now both candidates are actually saying that they may want to renegotiate USMCA, and so, obviously, the markets are generally concerned about that, right?
Yeah, and I mean, last time it was a big China problem. And Trump, we've been through that, done that. We know pretty much what he had to do there through that time frame. The Harris administration, it's interesting because we didn't really have to worry about exports a whole lot with the situation we had with tight ending stocks through pretty much their entire administration. But from what we know at this point, you know, they're in a pretty similar tariff trade situation, I think, from what we've read and what stances they have. But at this point here, you know, the corn and Mexico, that's going to be a growing concern compared to what we had last time with that talk. And then, you know, just look at what's going on with Brazil, too. What leverage are they going to take away from us with their production?
Yeah, no doubt. And they have a record crop on soybeans predicted. They're finally getting some rains and planting is picking up there. So that is generally a concern. The question I hear a lot of producers talk about is, you know, yeah, we've got all this demand coming at this market with these low prices, but is it enough to chew through a little under 2 billion bushels of corn and 550 million bushels of soybean carryover. Does it move the meter?
Well, you know, demand from an export perspective, exports just, we wait for usage to kick in now. That's the phase of this cycle that we're in. So exports are key in that. Exports are the easiest way to move bushels when you have a burdensome crop year. And long term, you know, we are working more towards more domestically driven demand areas to help use them. You know, that's more long term. But the short term here is we have too much corn. We need to get rid of it. Exports are an easy way to do such things. So we need to stay price competitive. And I think on corn and wheat, we're pretty competitive with the rest of the world when it comes to exports. Now, on the soybean side, it's not quite there yet, especially with this recent bump that we had on Gulf basis. So that takes us a little bit out of the ballpark, I guess, or out of the ball game on the soybean side. So do I think it grinds enough to really put us into a tighter demand situation again? Probably not, but it's going to keep us out of the gutters a little bit and keep corn, for example, you know, bumping up against $4 futures on the December here as much as it can.
Yeah, no doubt. So, Matt, let's talk a little bit about the break-evens that we're seeing for producers. You know, these prices that we're talking about are almost a buck lower on corn, almost $3 lower than what we saw in the futures last fall in soybeans. Are most producers at break-even or below at these levels, or where are they at?
This would certainly push them down to much closer to the variable cost of production. So it's going to vary quite a bit depending on how much land they own versus how much is rented. But these lower prices in general are going to put some downward pressure on inputs across the board, and that'll put some downward pressure on rents and things like that too.
So what do you think about corn versus soybeans? Corn, we had higher input costs, but it sounds like producers probably got better yields. So was corn more profitable this year, you think, than soybeans just because of that or not?
I'd say probably so. The anecdotes of the yield ideas or anecdotes that I heard, corn was pretty good. Beans was not quite as good in this part of the country. So that means they got their closer to their revenue projection on the corn versus the beans. But since that's already kind of done with, I mean, you have to start looking already to 2025.
No doubt. So let's talk about that. What are you seeing in terms of farmers' intentions for this next year? Will we see a cutback in, say, fertilizer to cut down on input costs, or are we going to see a shift in acres? What do you think?
You could see a little bit of a reduction in some of the inputs, but for the most part, you know, unless there was some dramatic run-up in one particular input, let's say fertilizer got really, really high for some reason, you're not going to be adjusting too many of the input level decisions. I think the bigger thing would be coming down to what's the soybean to corn acre mix look like. Last year in South Dakota, the price signal was saying give us a lot of soybean acres relative to corn. So, I mean, strictly from a price perspective, soybeans should have been a more dominant crop than they were. Producers were able to get corn in a more timely manner last year. They took advantage of that. They also have better upside yield potential in general with corn. So that gave that overwhelmed the price signal last year. This year, that price signal, so looking at the 25, new crop 25 soybean to corn price ratio, it's lower than it was last year. But because last year was such an aberration, it wouldn't surprise me to see a little bit of a shift back to soybeans, at least in this part of the country.
Do farmers really use that corn to soybean price ratio? Because we talk about it every year. And then I see farmers plant more corn just because they like to plant corn, right?
Well, and that's where the pushback traditionally has been, well, they're not going to break their rotation and they're going to go, they're just going to stick with corn, soybean, corn, soybean. But in South Dakota, there's a little more flexibility at times. Corn on corn is not unheard of or not unexpected. And then beans on beans is not unheard of or unprecedented in any way. So they over time, it does tend to follow those price signals quite a bit, unless there's other major extenuating circumstances.
Yeah, but looking at tight margins for this coming year, right?
Yeah, but it's tighter on both crops. So then you can have something else like I continue to be surprised by how many fields of milo or grain sorghum we saw when you go across South Dakota this year. So it's you've got other. There's other things that can kind of creep in.
Right. Okay. Very good. We'll be back with more AgriTalk in this discussion coming up.
Welcome to the soothing sounds of Cropland Seed. It's the kind of sound you only get with broad access to high-performing genetics and traits and years of data from extensive testing. Also, retailers can recommend what will work best in your fields. Take some stress out of your season. Talk to your local retail seed expert about Cropland Seed today.
What's the first thing you do in the morning? For many farmers and ranchers, it's checking weather and market updates. Make AgWeb Daily Newsletter part of your morning routine. Not only bringing you essential news and weather updates, but also covering topics such as smart farming and agriculture's next generation. And each weekday, stay informed and stay ahead with AgWeb Market Weekly. Whether you're at home or in the field, AgWeb Market Weekly keeps you connected and competitive.
Delivered straight to your inbox. Subscribe to both today at agweb.com/newsletters and never miss a beat.
Let's go to the markets page at ProFarmer.com and check today's closes, where December hard red winter wheat futures were 2.5 cents lower at 566.75. December soft red wheat down 2.5 to 568. December corn futures were 3.75 cents higher at 414.5. March corn added 3.25 cents to 429.25. January soybean futures down 3/4 to 9.93.75. March beans fell 1.25 cents to 10.08.25. December cotton today 60 points higher at 70.17. On your livestock's December fat cattle down 37.5 cents to 185.92.5. Novi feeders $1.50 higher at 246.87.5. And December hogs gained 27.5 cents to 84.07.5. Try ProFarmer.com.
Well, now, which would you rather have? World-class seed genetics and traits, or seed that's been tested and proven to yield in your area? Well, with Pioneer, you get both, plus the support of a dedicated local team. For the unbeatable combination of elite seed genetics, local knowledge and insights, and rigorous local testing, contact the team at Bowers Seeds and Service, your local authorized Pioneer sales representative serving the Durand area. At Pioneer, our name is our mission, and what's next happens here.
The Wisconsin Corn Growers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit wicorn.org and become a member today.
Farmers, now's the time to apply lime to your fields from Lamb Ag Services. Lime reduces soil acidity, improves soil structure, promotes root growth, and improves crop yields. Lamb Ag Services sources lime from area quarries and offers straight or variable rates to match your field's soil needs. When you call Lamb Ag Services, there's no middleman. They answer the phone and do the work on your farm. Call Brian at 715-279-0267 for your lime application needs with Lamb Ag Services.
Here's your Real Country 1430 forecast.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlau. A high-pressure system has settled in, clearing those clouds and calming our winds, but also providing some crisp temperatures. Highs today will only climb to the upper 40s and tonight fall to the mid-30s. But with plenty of sunshine on tap and warming temperatures, Saturday looks splendid. Grandpa's Barbecue Sauce. Get yours now at grandpasbbqshop.com. It's 43 degrees at our studios.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Knowledge is power. We're here to charge your batteries. AgriTalk.
And welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Michelle Rook in for Chip Flory today, and we are celebrating the SDSU College Roadshow today. Mike Miner with Professional Ag Marketing and Matt Dearson, SDSU Extension Risk and Business Management Specialist, both joining us here on the show today as our SDSU theme continues. Mike, we kind of went into the break talking a little bit about the corn versus soybean price ratio and what the market is trying, what signals the market's trying to send in terms of what to plant for next year. Do you kind of agree with what Matt said, especially when you look at, soybeans? Is there more downside risk to soybeans versus corn for this next year?
Yeah, I'm struggling with the soybean demand side right now. We really haven't stimulated much demand out of the soybeans compared to what corn has at this point. So fundamentally speaking, it looks like corn has a little bit better picture, a little bit better outlook than maybe what the soybean picture does here. And also, just in the time of the year that we're at, you know, next Tuesday is an election that's probably going to impact the soybean market more than what we would in the corn market. So a lot of planning decisions will be getting made right now. One thing I've learned is I don't think once you make the decision, you probably have a really hard time switching those acres. And two, at this point, I really think it's where you're at. A lot of areas now have got set into a pretty steady rotation. Maybe you change a field, but that's about it. So I think when it comes down to it, with the reaction of a 2025 outlook, I think on the way up, producers are going to look a little bit more aggressively to say, you know, if we get back to this number, I'm probably going to take some risk off rather than, you know, locking in certain inputs or things like that. I think that's where the proactive, more aggressive people will come out this time and say, yeah, that price probably looks okay this time around.
Yeah. So you mentioned the election and some of the nervousness there about the tariffs, about a possible trade war. So China has been buying soybeans here, but they look like they really don't want to buy anything after January. Is that because of the election, you think, or is that just because they think Brazil's crop's going to be in by then, or we'll have certainty about that crop by then?
I think more about the Brazil crop. I mean, by the time you get to February, we should be shifting most of those imports into China from Brazil with their major crop that they're producing. So at this point, it doesn't look like we're really that far behind out of the Brazil crop. We're back to a very normal planting pace and a very big crop. It looks like it's on the horizon for them with a lot of acres again. So if they continue to get some of these rains that are in the forecast, it'll be off to a really good start. And I think that's a bigger influence on it. And maybe they just won't get as aggressive here from the U.S. depending on what happens with this election.
I also want to ask you about the product markets and what's going on there. Today we saw India buy 30,000 metric tons of soybean oil. That's very rare. Palm oil's been hitting contract highs, so soybean oil's been moving higher with it. But yet soybean meal today made new contract lows. What's going on?
Well, the palm oil story really starts back all the way to the beginning of the year. I mean, since April, palm oil prices have been steadily climbing, and they're really sitting at about two-year highs here. So this all starts on the palm oil side, I think, and then that's what's been pulling the soybean oil side higher. And you could go back to the weather patterns and the El Nino pattern that's developed with, you know, you've had some aging trees and you've had some other related cost-cutting measures going on in Indonesia and Malaysia that I think they just haven't really been able to recover after this COVID pandemic. And that was some contributing factors that have fueled some of these concerns about the labor pool over there. And now all of a sudden, we've got, the part of the world that supplies about 85% of our global production is getting a little bit tight logistically. So, palm oil prices have jumped like 20% starting off in the first quarter of like 2024. And we've had a little bit of price correction since then. But at this point, I think palm oil's kind of at the forefront of this.
Yeah. So we've been talking about how prices are much lower than a year ago at this time. And Matt, we just wrapped up October where we set those harvest prices for crop insurance. How much lower are they versus the spring base prices?
Yeah, if you look at corn, started with the initial guarantee of 466 a bushel and then finished at 416. So that's a clear 50 cent a bushel decline on corn price. And then on the soybean side, you dropped from 1155 down to 1003 a bushel. So that just about a $2 drop there. So that would have provided some protection for growers that had done a lot of hedging and then perhaps had a production shortfall. For the typical or average grower, though, it is a price decline, but it's not dramatic enough that it's going to give the average producer who had, say, average or slightly below average yields any kind of a pop from the insurance side of things. So it's there, but it's one of those things. It's like you with the good yields or reasonable yields and a decline in price, the producer ends up carrying the bill or footing the bill for that.
So you don't think we're going to see a lot of claims?
Not directly related to that. Unless you were in an affected area where your yield is dramatically, your individual yield was dramatically lower or your county or bigger area was affected. But I haven't heard that much, at least in South Dakota, as far as like a major area affected in a major way.
What do you see for either ARC or PLC payments at current prices? Will we trigger any of those?
Yeah, the PLC didn't look like that was going to trigger anything anywhere, and the ARC was going to trigger a few things. Some of the wheat in some of the counties in South Dakota, and then if you get into the other crops, there were some more affected areas in the southern Corn Belt area, Nebraska and such, that had a little more, or more counties with more claims. But there too, I mean, that's coming quite a bit late in the game. It's tied to 23. So it can make a little bit of a difference, but nothing tied directly with this year's that's coming with dollars to do anything about this year.
Yeah. I also want to talk just a little bit about storage decisions this year. Mike, first of all, did you have as many producers that stored corn and soybeans this year as a year ago, or what were some of those decisions here at harvest time look like?
It seemed like a unanimous decision that the soybeans are going to get sold out of the field, which makes sense. You had high interest rates. Carry was decent, but just not enough to really make it worth it. A lot of producers are needing cash this fall as well. So it was a very easy decision to get rid of soybeans right out of the field, and they came quick too. So that was pretty easy. You had a decent corn crop waiting for you to come into as well right after that to fill most of your bin space in a likely scenario. So a decent amount of corn got stored if they could. The carry was somewhat decent at the start of harvest, and that was incentivizing. And then it came out dry. So when you're selling corn into the elevator at 15%, you can kind of skip a trip to the dryer and just take it straight to town, Michelle.
Yeah, that was the one salvation of this dry weather. While it trimmed maybe a few soybean yields because of the low moisture, at least we didn't have to dry any corn. Matt, as far as storage decisions this fall, if you got on-farm storage, maybe it's an easy decision. But do you recommend commercial storage here with the current interest rate environment?
I suppose on corn, if you were able to get storage rates that were cheap enough, you might consider storing that way. There is the carry in the market, and that's why the on-farm storage was a better decision on corn than beans. It's also why the ethanol plants and anybody with the storage capacity was looking, so like a feedlot would look to lay in corn at harvest here, because if you look at the board and subtract off the interest charge, it's cheaper to get the corn now than to, say, wait 3 months or 6 months from now.
Yeah. I guess when you look at the cost of storage with the carry in the market. Is there enough carry for you to make money if you hold?
That's where if you're paying commercial storage, it's probably closer to a wash. Okay. Where it's not a no-brainer, but if you have on-farm storage and you're down at that interest only charge, there it's making more sense, or there's more of a return at, say, what is a typical farmer grower looking at for an interest rate right now? It could be anywhere as low as 4%, the treasury rate, up to, let's say 8 or 9%. If they've got an operating loan that or a line of credit that they're using at a higher rate. So then that's going to drive a little bit of it too. Who's got a lower cost of funds and the ability to store.
Yeah. We're going to talk about livestock in the next segment, but I'm curious from both of your perspectives, is this a time when livestock producers need to get their feed needs locked in? Matt, you go first.
Well, need is maybe a strong word. Certainly if they have the storage space for it, there's the incentive is there to fill up the bins now, rather than think you're going to get it cheaper on the board or buy some carry or some upside protection.
Okay.
You've got an incentive to lay in the corn, especially.
You bet. Mike, are you recommending buying feed here for your clients?
Well, the one that seems really easy for me is a soybean meal. I mean, that continues to the downside. New leader, new contract lows being established. I think that's a pretty easy decision here from both a cash and a futures perspective.
All right. We're going to talk a little bit more about the livestock markets, cattle and hogs, with Mike Miner and Matt Dearson when we come back here on AgriTalk.
Hey, this is Matthew with Bluff Country Feed and Seed. When you start to think about planting roots and building your foundation for spring, fertilizing crops is like putting money in the bank. You put dollars or pounds in, but are your investments paying you interest? Or does it seem like you only get out what you put in, or even less? Soil health and living biology are the ticket to unlocking the next bushel. Farming for Biology takes a customized approach. Let my team help create your soil health strategy. Check out our website or give us a call today.
At Security Financial Bank, we understand what it takes to grow what matters. We know success doesn't happen overnight. It takes honest work, day in and day out. We value trust, leadership, and service. We are SFB, bankers who believe in your business, your family, your future. Bankers who believe in you. Learn more at sfbank.com. Member FDIC.
Eric Hovde's been caught lying again. Caught lying about Tammy Baldwin 20 times in his ads. The latest, quote, Hovde falsely claimed that Tammy Baldwin supports sex change surgery on minors. The truth? Tammy Baldwin doesn't support that, and there's no sex change surgeries on minors anywhere in Wisconsin. None. Hovde also lied about Baldwin, quote, giving our money to a transgender clinic. That's been found false 3 different times. The Journal Sentinel says the truth is Baldwin supported mental health funding for a homeless youth shelter. That's right. Hovde's attacking a place for homeless kids. We all know what Eric Hovde is doing. He's trying to scare you, but they are all lies. Wisconsin is better than this. We're not going to let some billionaire California banker lie his way into the United States Senate.
I'm Tammy Baldwin, running for Senate, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Tammy Baldwin for Senate.
We have been talking about fall fertilizer applications with Dustin DeMoss from Nutrien. Dustin, nobody would put fertilizer on in the fall if it didn't make sense financially to do it. Talk to me about the returns on a fall fertilizer application.
Yes, many farmers consider applying fertilizer in the fall for multiple reasons. The time saves them a lot of time, being able to reduce that workload in the spring and get some of that work done in the fall when they have a nice window where the weather's fit, the soil conditions are fit.
Well, and Dustin, what it does is it just removes some of the vulnerability of getting caught in a wet spring, right?
That's exactly right. When you look at the spring season, you never know what to anticipate. It could be wet, it could be dry with time to apply stuff, but you never know. So when you're thinking about your workload and spreading that out to where it fits with your management system, fall application is a good time to apply nutrients for the crop.
Yep. And if this product is delivered in the fall, you can put it on in the fall. You don't have to store it through the winter and, you know, have some physical risk to the product while it's in storage.
Yeah, when you're considering a fall application of fertilizer, you don't have to worry about storing that over the winter. You can get it applied when the conditions are fit, and you don't have to worry about any damage of handling the fertilizer between fall, bin storage, and spring application. So it allows you to get that fertilizer applied in a timely fashion in a good window when conditions are fit.
Yeah, what it does is it allows you to get ahead of the game and be ready for when temperatures and fields get fit in the spring of the year. Dustin, where can listeners go for more information?
Yeah, if you want more information on ESN, you can go to smartnitrogen.com. And for more information on our Smart Nutrition MAP Plus MST, you can go to smartnutritionmst.com.
Fantastic. Thank you, Dustin. That is Dustin DeMoss with Nutrient. No doubt you've heard of MetLife, but did you know that MetLife Investment Management has over 100 years of ag lending experience? The MetLife Investment Management team maintains close relationships with its borrowers and can structure a customized loan with flexible terms to meet your financial needs. Looking to expand, refinance, or recapitalize? Consider MetLife Investment Management. Learn more at MetLife.com/ag.
Wake up, get ready, grab breakfast, go to work, grab lunch, come home, run to practice, run to the store, grab dinner, go to bed, and repeat. Food fuels your day, and we fuel the people producing it with the latest news, information, and perspectives from across the globe. Ag Day is a place to learn about the business of food and farming. Join us and our team of experts as we cover the stories that keep the world moving. That's weekdays for Ag Day, the country experience.
Chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
And welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Michelle Rook in for Chip Gorey. We are celebrating College Roadshow this week at South Dakota State University with Mike Miner, a professional ag marketing, and Matt Dearson, SDSU Extension Risk and Business Management Specialist. Well, guys, let's talk in this final segment about livestock, Matt, cattle. Lower weekly closes this week, and boy, it's been kind of volatile. Do you think the cattle market is looking a little toppy or tired?
Probably a little tired. There's been a pretty good run in the last, 2 months, really. And you start looking out into 2025 at some of the price levels. Did quite a bit of looking into the economics of backgrounding calves. You know, that feeder cattle market has kind of come up here quite a bit as of late, and the fats are sitting there at reasonable prices too, headed into next year.
So do you think right now these are good places to be hedging? What risk management strategies are you recommending?
Probably looking at if you're backgrounding, certainly be looking at some downside price risk protection just in general, because if something dramatic were to happen with corn, for example, or the outlook for next year, you could really hit the feeders with some downside risk. On the fats, I think you've got the fundamentals in the long run are still supportive for the most part for fed cattle. The drawbacks I see are the continued heavy weights, slaughter weights, but the numbers for next year doesn't really look like you're going to see the expansion happen. So other than weights, I don't see much to give, you know, huge downside price pressure. So as far as strategies and things like that, I'm kind of indifferent with what to do with the feeders, but on the fats, you've got pretty low volatility levels in that market. So if you do have some fats, something on the protection side might make more sense, or is probably going to pencil out better than futures.
Yeah, we do have LRP insurance, obviously that's helpful. Are you seeing any signs yet of this herd rebuilding? Are we seeing enough heifer retention to say that there's any going on?
Yeah, if you look at the if you look at sale barn prices and stuff like that, anything labeled as a replacement heifer was coming in at a premium here this fall. But for the most part, calf prices have shot way up here in the last few weeks. And if you look at the latest cattle on feed report from last Friday, gave us another hint at that heifer mix. Other analysts are saying that heifer mix is, it didn't move much. Slight decrease in the number of heifers on feed and a slight increase in the number of steers on feed. So, if you think about maybe what's happening, a few guys might be trying to hold back a few replacements, but in part that's just to get back to a stable level in terms of where we've seen cow slaughter the last couple of years. And then if that steer number is higher, that means you've taken a small calf crop and pulled a few of those steers forward. So that's kind of good news for the, once you get into 2025 again.
Yeah, well, that's good news. We got to get these guys healed up. Mike, what about lean hog futures? More contract highs today. We had higher weekly closes. What's driving this contra-seasonal rally?
Well, up until this point, Michelle, it's been mainly a demand story. We've had a really good demand here through most of this, 20-some dollar rally we've had since the middle of July. But up until this week, it's been more of a supply story this week, actually. It's been a lot more active, at least. So maybe both are pushing it. Product's still high. But the supply story finally kicked on a little bit this last week. And yeah, I would say the Packers are chasing cash a little bit higher now. So both are contributing here in the past week, Michelle.
Yeah. You told me that there's only one other time in history December hogs have been at or above these levels. Is that right?
At expiration. So, 2014, we traded much above this through the summer and whatnot. But at expiration, as we near that here in another month or so, we've got to be looking at that 87 level that 2014 came off pretty hard. So to spend a lot of time above 85 here is historically incredible, especially this time of year.
So producers, do you think they should be hedging here?
Yeah, to make it quite simple, yes. You look out into 24 to finish off, and then 25. The margins per head are substantial to make some risk off decisions here, especially after 23 was pretty rough. So to look out and really see some decent opportunities to play offense finally, I think we should get excited about that. Let's try to build that balance sheet up a little bit after a really rough 2023, and the next 12 to 15 months here look pretty promising. We've got good fundamentals still, and it's mainly been derived from a demand story. And I think that's worth noting that, these sell opportunities are coming and sticking around pretty decently. But at this point, I think we can play offense here, and we played defense for a long, long time. So let's go out and let's get some crushing done.
Yeah. And the funds have just piled in here. I was glad to see they defended their longs here, considering we did have that first bird flu case in hogs. So obviously the market shook it off pretty well.
Yeah, we're only 10,000 contracts away from a record managed money position on hogs, getting very close there. And then index fund wise, Goldman Sachs, that crowd, they are a long, record long right now. So substantial sized positions. You ran this market really hard this week on the futures. So I'm wondering if we're going to see some overbought technical action, especially with an election coming up next week. I'm very curious to see what risk off we have ahead of that.
No doubt. All right. Thanks so much to both of you, Mike Miner, Professional Ag Marketing, and Laverne Matt-Dierson at SDSU Extension Risk and Business Management Specialist, joining us here for AgriTalk for our SDSU College Roadshow. Appreciate both of you. Davis, come on back in here. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on next week.
Next week, we've got Chip Flory back first thing Monday morning. We got Wiesmeyer. We've got Machinery Pete. No. This was a fantastic conversation. We'll get him back, hopefully. I mean, he's up in South Dakota. Last time I was in South Dakota, I contemplated very long and hard not ever coming back. I'll be honest.
Is he hunting pheasants?
Well, he's going for shiny chickens. I think he means pheasants when he says that.
Okay, gotcha.
Take us home, Michelle.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us here for AgriTalk. Again, Chip will be back. Join us next Monday at 10:06 right here on AgriTalk.
Want to get smarter and have some fun while you're at it? Introducing Unscripted and Grow Getters, two of agriculture's most entertaining and engaging podcasts. Hosted by U.S. Farm Report's Tyne Morgan and Ag Day's Clinton Griffiths, Unscripted is your chance to meet the personalities behind the personalities. And with heart and humor, Grow Getters with host Davis Michelson explores ag's most innovative side hustles. You can find Unscripted and Grow Getters on the Farm Journal YouTube channel or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, antibodies, huddle up. We're a great team, but the flu is dominating. The good news is the human we're protecting just got his flu shot. That means all of us antibodies have strong new gear that will help us fight and defend against the flu. We must win so that our human can stay healthy and help protect the people he cares about most.
Let's work as a team to defend against the flu. Gear up with a flu shot to help protect yourself and others and reduce your risk of being sick or hospitalized with the flu. Learn more at GetMyFluShot.org. Brought to you by the AMA, CDC, and the Ad Council.
As the presidential campaign comes to a close, Kamala Harris is attacking environmental activist and presidential candidate Jill Stein. What's the truth? Kamala Harris has flip-flopped on the environment. Harris was opposed to fracking. Now she supports it. She supported the Green New Deal. Now she won't act on it. And what exactly has Kamala Harris done?